So I think before you joined Ship Mercury, you were actually the CMO of Two Suit, which is I think a Fortune 500 company that is involved in testing. So, coming from a CMO background of such a big company to a relatively smaller sized company, what would you say in your experience is, the biggest difference?
So I did lead America's marketing for Tuzu America. Overall, it's a company with over $3 billion in revenue. It's a German organization.
Welcome to the Meaningful Jobs Podcast Season 2. I'm your host, Adrian, and today we're extremely honored to welcome Jasmine, who's the CMO and CPO of Ship Mercury. So, how are you, Jasmine?
I'm doing great, Adrian. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. So, I'm really excited about today's episode because it's not always that we can get, a CMO and a CPO on the channel to share about the meaning of work as well as talk a little bit about employer branding. So, before we begin, could you tell us a little bit, Jasmine, about how you got to this position and briefly like how your career is so far?
Oh, delighted to share with you, Adrian, and it's an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you. You have to look at your career as an evolution and also evolve with the society, right? So maybe a few, a couple of decades ago, you would not be seeing a CMO and a CPO role shared, which is Chief Marketing Officer and Chief People Officer. The reality is, as things evolve, as we're all connected, as lines blend, it increasingly makes great sense to combine the two roles. Ultimately, it's about people, right? You connect to the people on the outside and you connect to the people on the inside. And as our visionary CEO, Josh Meadow, says, it's how you message to the people on the outside and you message to the people on the inside. So
Absolutely.
logically, that role, absolutely, the combining of the two roles in one person makes perfect sense.
I see. So, as you just alluded to, it's not often, well, it's not easy to imagine 10 years ago where, a CMO or CPO can just pop up and be so personable. And I really hope this today will be an opportunity, not just for our listeners, but, for your company as well, to really connect better, with your target audience. And so, as a CMO and CPO, I think a lot of people, the first thing they think about is you must be really busy. So can you tell us a little bit about your role and maybe your company as well?
Thank you. Well, our company, Mercury, and our website is shipmercury.com. We specialize in time and temperature sensitive shipping. There is really a huge purpose behind everything we do because there is a life behind every shipment. So it could be a special new drug that a company has spent 3, 4 years to develop with millions of dollars going into it, and it needs to be temperature controlled to go, say, to Switzerland from Cambridge, Massachusetts for a special testing. And that drug needs to be temperature controlled. It's a tremendously valuable substance that they're shipping, and you want to make sure that it arrives there, goes through customs, through everything. If it's a dry ice is replenished, so it has no hurdles and it gets to its destination with proof that it has been always at a steady temperature. That this is where we come in. We do also very customized pickups and deliveries because everything we do, there is some huge sensitivity behind it. But we, of course, can cover all aspects of shipping. We focus on healthcare and life sciences as the key industries, and we really specialize in those specialty needs. So we're very honored to partner with our client companies to bring their purpose to life. And there is a life behind everything we ship.
I see. So, as the being in the position of both CMO and CPO, I guess it's hard enough, to work well in just one of these roles. But, the fact that you have to work in both capacities, can you tell, our audience, what your daily role is and how you manage your responsibilities?
In any job, no matter what your role, what your title is, it's being able to really distill what the priorities are and focus on those. You know, think about them as like the big rocks. Covey talks about addressing the big rocks first, and then the little ones will fulfill the spaces. So knowing how to prioritize, knowing how to work on things that serve your company values. Like our company values are client obsession, relentless improvement, and world-class teamwork. So if we're going on a tangent on an initiative that has nothing to do with those values, we probably will not embark on them. It's knowing how to also balance things and priorities. Frankly, everything I've been doing up to this point has really prepared for doing this. And it's not, you know, everybody talks about work-life balance, but it's about being able to handle multitudes of things, knowing when to prioritize what. So to me, it comes in very naturally. And I do not see that as a challenge or a huge issue. It's a very natural progression in my career. And I really love it. And I love helping bring out the best in people, be it on the outside and on the inside. And we are a Gallup-based organization in that every single employee we have has been tested to Gallup strengths, and we try Gallup Clifton strengths. And we try to work from people's strengths and understand what is it that's driving each person's motivation, like what puts wings, wind under their wings. How will they take off? How will they succeed? If you work from people's strengths, you're much more likely to succeed than focusing primarily on people's weaknesses, which is what most of corporate America does anyway, all the time. So
I think you mentioned a really good point about being able to prioritize in every role, especially in, you know, a C-suite role. And you said, you know, prioritization comes naturally to you. So how does this apply to what you do at the moment?
It's about being honest with yourself, being able to, again, serve the priorities. And every given day, we have a ton of things to accomplish, but you have to understand, is it urgent or important? What's the gravitas of something? What's the gravitas of actually not doing something, right? So knowing how to do priorities, I very frequently talk about building an onion, which is the opposite of the common phrase of peeling an onion. Sometimes you also have to take a layering approach. I'd rather do 5 things exceedingly well than 15 things in an extremely mediocre manner. So it's also about making choices. And again, that's also driving prioritization. Then you can have peace of mind. Otherwise, you will start jumping at the flavor of the hour idea, and that gets only chaos and does not lead or inspire people either, right? So knowing how to prioritize, if you can run that throughout the organization to focus on the truly important things and to drive those forward, to keep progressing on those, makes a world of difference.
So, being the CMO and the CPO of, you know, quite a large organization, what would you say are your impacts on the organization, like your most important impacts, you know, as a C-suite, you know, person driving the overall growth of your company?
Well, I would hope that others are better than me about my impact. But what I aim to do is, as I said, bring out the best in people. On the inside, you really want people to have wind under their wings. You want them to be inspired. You want them to be purpose-driven and understand why is it that we show up at this place day in and day out. What difference does our work make? We all kind of want to be purpose-driven as people. It's not just about earning a paycheck. It's about making a difference and having an impact on the world as we have it. When it comes to the outside, it's about building the brand. It's about helping drive the revenue. But ultimately, it's really enabling our clients, our partners, be better at what they do. We simplify shipping for them because it's the type of shipping we handle is fairly complex, very complex. So it's about, again, putting wind under their wings. So their work gets to its final destination. It could be a knee replacement that needs to be in the hospital in time for surgery. Some things are very sensitive, like they cannot be very easily polluted. So there are so many considerations at play. So we try to make sure that we help deliver on that promise and facilitate other success as well.
So I think before you joined Ship Mercury, you were actually the CMO of Tufsud, which is, I think, a Fortune 500 company that is involved in testing. So, you know, coming from a CMO background of such a big company to a relatively smaller size company, what would you say in your experience is, you know, the biggest difference?
So I did lead America's marketing for Tufsud America. Overall, it's a company with over $3 billion in revenue. It's a German organization. So I was an honor serving there. I really love Tufsud. I actually met with their new CEO recently. We have the Americas, Fabian Schober, brilliant guy. We had lunch and reminisced on all the achievements and accomplishments. It's a really great feeling. There, I think my big achievement was building together a marketing center of excellence. So my role there was vice president of marketing for the Americas. So building a center of marketing excellence that really led a lot of the innovation and launching new approaches, driving with results, and also introducing revenue marketing. Seeing what's the direct impact of marketing on the revenue, which historically has been very hard for many to quantify. But even like inside sales became part of marketing there to drive that revenue generation. And also driving marketing effectiveness on so many levels, helping build the brand. And bringing, again, serving the audience in a way that's most beneficial to them, and changing also the voice, going from we to what we can do for you, because nobody cares about the me, we, chest thumping marketing. That's very outdated. What value do you bring to your audience, to your customer, to your partners? How are you differentiating yourself for them, for their needs? What problems are you solving? That's an entirely different conversation, because everybody's just tired of, you know, me, chest thumping.
Well, yeah, I think I totally agree. And, you know, you mentioned about revenue marketing, and I guess you played a big role in terms of leading the company to better quantify the marketing ROI, I guess. So can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly is revenue marketing and how your role as a CMO, you know, plays a part in this?
Revenue marketing is more of an emergent type of marketing that actually looks at what direct and indirect impact marketing has on the organization's revenue. It starts with having clarity on bringing in inbound leads, and inbound leads are usually the result of your content marketing and SEO, and being able to effectively convert those to revenue. To me, the only true SQLs are inbound leads. Everything else, all the MQLs, that's like, okay, they're contacts, they're somewhat nurtured, they're this or that, but they really take a longer time to convert to become an SQL. True SQLs are inbound leads. They're in essence self-qualified, sales-qualified leads, because people are raising their hand and saying, I want to conduct business with you. I have this need and I need a solution. And there's a lot of research that shows if you're the first one to get back to an inbound lead inquiry, and they're likely to go to 2, 3, 4 places, if you get back to them within the first hour, you're like 1,000 times more likely to convert them than if you get back to them 24 hours later. So it's about instilling best practices in an organization to be responsive to client needs. You also have to look at the cumulative impact of marketing, not just like the first closure, but how do those relationships evolve over time? How much more additional business starts coming into the organization just related to marketing? And it's also about building very effective collaboration with sales. It's not an us versus them proposition. It's like us together coming to a joint kind of destination, because that destination is company's health and growth. And ultimately, people talk about, oh, revenue, are these people greedy, this and that. But really, it's about driving social progress, Also, any organization, no matter their mission, they're also supporting the families of the employees within that organization. So if you're on a path of growth, you're creating stability for so much social good for the society, for all of your employees. You're creating a very stable environment. You're providing for them and their families. And that in itself is a huge contribution to community. It's a mission, it's a purpose. So any company that's not focused on growth will in essence end up hurting everyone.
So just before we talk, dive deeper into corporate culture, can you tell us how you make sure that you are always the first company to get back to these inbound inquiries? Like, what's your secret sauce, if you can tell us?
Just be responsive. There's really no secret sauce. The secret is be disciplined, be responsive, really care. If you care, if you track, if you look at your analytics, you will be the first one to get back to companies. And we had the same at Tuvzuit as well, and Tick industry, which is testing, inspection, and certification, traditionally has been less responsive, right? Because they work with complex technologies. So when we first raised that issue, I remember the date when it was done at Tuvzuit, May 19, 2019. It was a corporate presentation, big sales marketing meeting. I think some people looked at me like I had grown three heads, talking about how we will be getting back to them within 15 minutes. And guess what we did? Wow. And the results start speaking for themselves. It's really doable, but it's not that complicated, right? It's having the will, the vision, and the wherewithal to follow through. And then if you care, and if you genuinely care, it comes through. And the recipient on the other end of the phone or email senses that, okay, you really care to respond to them expeditiously. At Mercury, we have similar key response times, not just for inbound leads, but also for our services. We have service level agreements where we want to assure our clients that we'll be getting back to them within our promised periods.
So, you know, diving deeper into what ShipMercury does. So, you know, you mentioned about how you make sure your customers are happy and that you can deliver the best solution to them. So what's a higher purpose of the work that your company is doing for the community, would you say?
Well, we serve the community on so many levels. First of all, any decent organization that has accomplished employees is already serving the community because it's serving the stability of those families. We serve the community, especially the life sciences community, by giving them peace of mind that we are there fending for them. We are a MassBio preferred vendor of services, again, really serving the very powerful and growing life sciences community, both in Massachusetts and nationally and internationally. So that's a service because there is a tremendous need in reaching out to the community. So
you know, in terms of the marketing direction of your company, is there anything you can share about, you know, the next, let's say, 5 years of the marketing direction of your company?
Good questions. I mean, 5 years in this day and age is really a long time because there could be another technology that none of us is thinking about. Like, I think voice search might be kind of taken for granted in 5 years. Who knows, right? So we really need
to... It's not that prevalent now, isn't it?
It's not. Voice search is not... I mean, it's prevalent with Alexa in people's homes, but for B2B businesses, voice search is not prevalent, I would say, yet. Well, we could all see that coming. So 5 years for any business in this day and age in terms of technology is like a very, very long time. Any business that tries to be competitive in terms of marketing has to be really open to get ahead of any trend. I mean, everybody's talking about AI today and ChatGPT is very much on the scene. But you know what? AI technology has been around for decades now, but more in the background. So it's becoming more commercialized and consumer friendly. And again, any marketing organization that dismisses that and does not know how to harness it intelligently will, again, be behind their time. So knowing how to work with AI, knowing what to do and what not to do, knowing how to harness the power of any technology and stay current, knowing what your tech stack should be. For instance, right now, we have also introduced Mindbox, which is a phenomenal marketing automation tool, but it also does workflows exceptionally well. It kind of combines technologies of a number of different companies like Sixth Sense, HubSpot, coming from different edges, bringing all of that into marketing automation. So it's about staying, again, ahead of the game. So what more, what will continue to be present in 5 years too, I think will always be content, because people will never tire of a good story of engaging content. Like, think about it, the success of Hollywood, it's all about stories.
Right, right. You know, I'm always fascinated to chat about, you know, ChatGPT, because, you know, it's a relatively new tool that only came out last November. I personally have used it quite often. Was really impressed at first, actually, but then I actually noticed quite a lot of flaws in it, in that, for example, answers can be, you know, pretty generic sometimes. So do you see, you know, any difficulties using ChatGPT or other AI tools in a business context?
It's just with anything, you have to discern and be discriminate on the basis of quality, right, for business. Yeah. For instance, the same goes for any website. I mean, there are websites that have credible data and information that you could use for research. There are websites that have absolute garbage. I've experimented a lot with ChatGPT. It can be useful for certain things, but for instance, it does not convey emotion. That you could, if you were to use just ChatGPT generated blog content, which I know some companies are doing, it doesn't also give you that level of precision or context that you would need. Lack of emotion and engagement. It's kind of very objective language. You can almost see through it that it's ChatGPT generated. On the other hand, for certain purposes, it's supremely helpful. So
do you see, I'm not sure if your company is using a lot of ChatGPT in your marketing or in other parts of your business?
We use it for informative purposes. It's almost like another way of searching for information. Yeah. We're not using it directly for our marketing purposes. But I've asked, for instance, the ChatGPT application to generate a position description because I've been very interested. And you can take parts of it, but you will not take the entirety of it. So it can inform, it can speed up some work being done, but it's not on its own the end all and be all. So again, you have to be a discerning user and know, how am I going to use this? What is the value of this? How pertinent or salient is this proposition?
So you also mentioned about voice search, which, you know, really, really intrigues me, because it's not very prevalent now, but you said, you know, that's one of your predictions, you know, in the next few years. So how are you guys preparing for this?
Trying to be ahead of the trend, we have redone our website. One of the things, our website will continue being extremely relevant because it's your 24/7 store. That's how people search for information these days. So you want your website to be SEO optimized, and you want your website to meet people's needs. So, and what's, you know, I talk a lot about B2B, but truthfully today we should be talking about B2P, business to person. Because the same person who is a consumer dealing with B2C businesses, they're the ones shopping on Amazon, eBay, Expedia, Orbitz, you name it. Same company, by the way, right? Expedia and Orbitz. Yeah. But when they have experiences framed by those searches, by those digital experiences. So when they come to the door of a B2B business, none of them stops and says, okay, wait, this is a B2B business, so it has to be boring and uninteresting and I have to live with that. Absolutely not. They actually bring their B2C expectations to the B2B business. So it becomes business to person. Those are the same decision makers, and we need to be able to engage them equally. So my sense is that voice search will be ascendant. It's one of the other trends. You know, everybody's pushing ease at every level. And how much easier it is to search with voice, I'm already talking to my car, right? So obviously, I'm going to bring that behavior into my business dealings, trying to do a search very quickly or get a quote on something on the fly through voice. Businesses better be ready.
And that's why I'm doing a podcast, you know. But other than that, I'm really, interested in interviewing people. That's why I do it. But yeah, I think voice search is one of the, big trends in the next few years as well. So in terms of working for Shipmercury, can you tell us what the corporate culture is like working for you guys, and how do you select candidates?
We select candidates very intentionally. Because you're hiring, frankly, into the unknown, and you need to also hire for the right attitude and cultural fit, the ability to kind of innovate, be curious, look for alternatives, have that desire to find a solution and problem solve. Because what we do is extremely sensitive work, and we can't deliver on our promise to our audience, to our clients, to our partners, if people just don't care. So we're looking for people with a strong sense of ownership. So that's very important. People who actually care and will deliver and have a desire to find solutions. Because guess what? Very often we encounter very complex challenges. Weather patterns might happen somewhere, in some geographies, and our people may need to reroute planes, because we also do NFO, which is next flight out. We get sensitive shipments on passenger flights. So all of a sudden that flight may land somewhere and we may need to reroute. So you need people who can care and deliver and problem solve. And we ask people to also do a craft demo, which, depending on the role, the right people are in the room, sometimes five or six, and the people are given an assignment to tell us how they would go about that assignment. Then we have one-on-one meetings with them. We try to make it like an efficient and effective half day. We may have lunch with them and have a really candid conversation. And we make a decision based on criteria that are key to success in that role.
So what would you say is in it for candidates who join your team?
If you want to join a vibrant company that's happening and going places, that's really growing in revenue, that is also on very mission critical business, come join Mercury. This is an ideal place to be. We're really growing and expanding. We just recently launched operations in Columbus, Ohio. We're pretty much in every major market in North United States in particular. We're globally present. We ship all over the world. You get to work with different geographies, different cultures, different languages. It's fascinating.
So finally, as a CMO marketer yourself, can you tell us how you got into marketing, and how do you find meaning in work aside from revenue or monetary rewards?
I got into marketing kind of somewhat accidentally. I was working on my master's thesis and wanted to do some work on the side to make money. And I got an interview to write corporate promotional materials. And I did not even realize the gravitas that I was interviewing with the CMO of the institutional side of Fidelity Investments, Stuart Rose. And he was asking me questions. He gave me something to look at, and turns out it was his writing. And being very young, and like I
Sorry,
criticized it,
so
I said, this is no data.
wow, really? So you didn't know who was interviewing you and you criticized him.
I kind of did not know in depth. I knew he was the hiring manager, I was told, but
Right.
only later did I learn that he was the chief marketing officer of
Wow.
Fidelity Investments' institutional side of business. I'm still on very good terms with him, very friendly, and learned a ton from him. But I spoke my mind and I said, well, this doesn't say much. You're talking about retirement accounts, wealth transfer. So why don't you talk data? And, you know, he looked at me and said, you're hired. So that launched me really into marketing. I had the good fortune to evolve through the right different types of marketing, which helped me in my current CMO role. And also I was with some very progressive organizations like Intertech that at the board level decided way before digital marketing was a thing that they had to focus on digital marketing. And it was really transformational to be part of that experience, to be at the right place at the right time. But now recognizing that you're at the right place at the right time is a huge, hugely important factor as well, and kind of really thriving on that opportunity.
So, you know, what advice would you give for people who might want to join marketing or switch careers to marketing, and how can they find meaning in work as a marketer?
Marketing can be extremely fulfilling because everything you do, you can see results if you're doing it right. There's a lot of psychology in marketing. So to be an effective marketer, I actually even wrote an entire article about that I published. It's not directly marketing education because academic institutions lag in curriculum development. So by the time somebody graduates with a marketing degree, it's probably outdated. Right. But it's having a sense of curiosity, of that intellectual desire to keep on learning, having an analytical mind, being really curious to hone in on different things and keep on learning, having growth mindset. If you have those, you'll become a very effective marketer. And the sense of satisfaction is a sense of achievement and accomplishment because you're always helping grow a business.
So, you know, you mentioned about the positive qualities of people who should join marketing. Are there any qualities of people who shouldn't join marketing, in your view?
if you're not willing to deal with the unknown, it's probably not the right discipline to be part of. If you're not willing but the unknown, to be an effective marketer, it's science and art combined. For instance, you need to sometimes put yourself, go out on a limb, go to the edge of something, experiment with things. And sometimes when you experiment, you have to know, you do not know the outcome, but you better learn to fail fast in marketing, right? You always have to have that sandbox that's allocated to learning things, doing things, to testing things. So that's really dealing with the unknown. If somebody's not equipped to deal with the unknown, with ambiguity, not a good discipline to be part of.
Yeah, so, you know, there you go, you know, from the CMO of ShipMercury. If you can't deal with the unknown, don't join marketing. But if you can, you know, do join marketing because it'll be a really rewarding career. So thank you so much, Jasmine, for, you know, coming up for the interview. I really enjoyed it and, you know, wish you all the best.
Thank you, Adrian. It's been a joy to be part of your podcast. Appreciate you having me.